welcome to Relationships 2.0 with author and clinical psychologist, Michelle Skeen. Michelle and her guests will endeavor to guide you through the pathways for self-understanding that will help you create and maintain safe and healthy relationships. You can find Michelle on the internet at michelleskeen.com. Now the host of Relationships 2.0, Michelle Skeen.
I'm Michelle. My special guest today is Alaya Dow. She is the author of Seven Cups of Consciousness, Change Your Life by Connecting to the Higher Realm. Welcome, Alaya. Is it Alaya?
Thank you. It is Alaya. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's great to have you. Let's start with you. I was thinking about this when I finished reading the book. Where should I have you start? Because there's so much that I want to ask you about. But maybe just explaining what just the book is and what the book is trying to achieve and what you're trying to help people with.
It essentially lines out seven concepts. And when we hold these seven concepts inside ourselves and our mind, our emotions, our energy fields, we then have the tools and a framework for changing our life, overcoming our challenges. And so we're actually not using our mind or the physical dimension to make these changes, which is a slightly different approach than a lot of ways of therapy. And what I'm doing isn't therapy. It's really using this energetic vibrational part of you to make the changes that then reflect into the physical realm. Your emotions, your thoughts, and your bodies feel that shift. So shall I kind of do a quick little overview of these seven concepts?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Okay. The first concept speaks to the idea that we live in a multidimensional world. We have the physical dimension, which is like the first floor. But then we have all of these other floors, literally, in the building that we do have access to, that we can use. And there are resources on these higher floors, other realms, other dimensions. The second concept ties into that first one, speaking to the idea that you are never alone. You have guides, teams, angels around you, and you can actually get them to hold very particular qualities and vibrations inside themselves that can positively impact and support you. The third concept talks about changing your inner world, but again, not doing anything in the physical dimension to change it. You're using your higher self, your energy fields, to affect a change in a higher floor and then reflect that inner shift down to yourself here in this realm. And the fourth concept, use your challenges to grow, flipping it into practicing what you truly intend on mastering. And then the fifth concept, which is a little bit out there, it's a little bit of a stretch, but people have talked about it a bit in our society, where you are not your body. You are actually riding in a physical human form that is a nature spirit, and I call it the body deva, and it has its own consciousness, its own belief systems, its own behavior. And when we recognize that there are literally two souls happening in the same housing system, so to speak, we can learn how to cultivate a more co-creative, healthy ride. And that's actually the very first intimate relationship we have, is with our body. The sixth concept talks about you have gifts, wisdom, and mastery, and the journey of holding those inside yourself and modeling that in the world. And then the seventh concept, my favorite, you are perfect. There is a river of light that flows within you, and when you connect with that light, that essence, you feel connected and whole.
There are so many parts of this that I really like, and that seem to work with some of the things that I've learned from other authors I've had on my show. Like, I was thinking about Bill Phillips, who I just had on Expect the Unexpected. He is a psychic medium, and mm-hmm. and he talks about our soul family. And I was wondering if this is similar to what you're talking about with, you know, our teams, our team and our guides.
Yes, and definitely. I think of it as there are all of these beings in the universe, and some of them we have a closer affinity to. Just like in the physical dimension, if we meet somebody, it's like we've known them before. There's this familial vibration. And so the same thing goes with this angelic presence that does exist in a higher realm, that are individuals just like you. They're just on a different floor.
One of the things that I thought was really a great reminder for everyone, I think it was the fourth. Well, when you're talking about bringing, oh yeah, here it is. Oh, it's the third cup. This idea that the first step in changing your inner life requires awareness. And, I think that is something that a lot of people avoid, because bringing awareness to ourselves and whatever our struggles might be can be painful, and we like to avoid pain and seek pleasure, right?
Right. And if we recognize that we have these issues or these challenges, then what do we do? You know, so the book is really giving people a formula for how to go through the steps, literally step one, cultivating awareness, step two, now using your higher self. But we have to determine what it is our soul is really after. And I kind of hone it down into the most simple aspects of, from my perspective, people are here in this world having experiences, using the physical realm, using their relationships with everything to attain a very particular quality or vibration deep within. Now, we get really creative in how we do that. Sometimes it's very painful. Sometimes it's very inefficient and uncomfortable. And sometimes it's lovely. And so I basically walk people through the process of figure out what vibration or quality your soul is really determined to attain, and then use your higher self to start getting that vibration so that you don't have to employ the outer world to do it for you.
Right. And another thing that you talk about is, well, I mean, this book is really about empowering people, which is great, and helping people realize what they have control over. And often what we're trying so desperately to control is not what we have any control over. And you talk about this in the book about how we're often focused on other people in our lives, right? Their problems, mm-hmm. or the way that they need to meet our needs, what we need from them. You know, it's this idea of kind of external locus of control. And I think what you're saying, if I'm reading you and hearing you correctly, is that we have this internal locus of control that we need to tap into, and that it's beyond this dimension.
Beautifully put. Exactly.
That
is what I'm speaking about. You totally nailed it. And also, whenever we give responsibility to get our needs met externally, then we're actually a victim. It's not empowering, because we're dependent on somebody else validating, appreciating, loving, connecting, soothing, supporting. And so when we use this inner world of ours that I call the divine line river of light that flows within you, and we start getting those needs met internally at a vibrational level, then we actually start having healthier, more co-creative relationships instead of ones that are codependent.
And I think that the message is always the same, which is never what people want to hear. And that is, it's hard work and you have to do it. You know, if you want to make and you want to get to a better place in your life, you have to do it. And it's hard work. It doesn't just magically wash over you. And I think, and it's one of the things I like about your book, it's very realistic in that, okay, here are these things you can tap in, but you have to tap into them. You have to do this work. This isn't going to be easy. This isn't going to be without pain. But it's going to be working toward a greater good as opposed to pain that just keeps us deeply entrenched in our unhelpful behaviors and life, right?
Absolutely. And I think you spoke to this just earlier in the show, is that we are motivated by pleasure. We're not motivated by pain. And so when we recognize that starting to do this inner work and cultivate more evolved ways of being, more compassionate responses, better integrity with our boundaries and meeting our needs inside, we're actually moving towards greater pleasure and away from pain. And I think in the process of a soul awakening, becoming more conscious, we become more conscious of our discordant behavior, the unhealthy behavior, until it becomes intolerable. And then we change. And so the book is giving people a framework or a roadmap to start shifting the behavior before it becomes absolutely excruciating. So hopefully avoiding a few boxes of tissue.
Right. Let's talk about, I'd love for you to talk about one of your experiences, like the experience with Andrew, just to bring a real story in that people can attach to. I think all people can attach to the quest for romantic love and how easy it is to get tripped up.
Absolutely. So I was on the quest to find a beloved partner, and it took me about 3 years to actually meet my beloved partner. But in that process, there was much pain, because what I would do is I would draw in partners who were literally the reflection of my issues. And so in this one instance with Andrew in the book that I wrote about, I talk about how he showed up in my life. It was lovely. And then 2 or 3 weeks into the relationship, I had to leave town for a week or so and came back, and he had said, you know, I reconnected with my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, and we're going to try to work it out this time. And so there was this lack of commitment. And he had not been the first person, the first man who had showed up, literally not being able to commit to me. And I had to do some deep inner work and recognize that somewhere deep inside myself, I was actually not committing and showing up fully for myself, so that no matter how many men I pulled in, they would constantly be reflecting to me my lack of inner commitment. And so I worked diligently for a whole year, pulling myself into this inner river of light and committing more and more deeply to the light that flows within me, instead of wanting others to commit to me or committing to my work, my job, even my body, committing just to that light, and then was able to create a relationship of deep commitment, but it was because I was holding that deep inside.
So originally, you were kind of detached from yourself in a way. Is that what you're saying?
I wanted other people to show up for me and love me when I wasn't fully doing that inside myself.
Right.
And again, wanting others to meet a need for me that I wasn't even meeting inside myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wonder, right? Then we get upset, like, he's not showing up for me. Well, are you showing up fully for yourself? And is he showing up fully for himself, so that we can reflect that deep inner fullness onto the relationship?
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, just that idea of, you know, when you're doing the work on yourself and you're focused on what brings you joy and what fulfills you, that's usually the time that you attract people.
Absolutely, because you're being filled up and you're holding more light, more connection, more inner love. And then that is what we magnetically draw to us and reflect in our outer world.
And then you're coming across, obviously, as less, you're just not as needy of the other person.
Right. And then we also don't give our control away. A lot of the times we get into relationships where we're wanting the partner to meet our needs, and then they actually start controlling us because they feel like we're dependent upon them and they actually can control us. And so there's the solution too, that if you feel controlled by another, retrieve all responsibility that you've given them off of them, fire them from that job, and you meet your needs deep inside, and then empowerment begins to bloom to a greater degree.
Yeah, that's I just think that so that personal growth is so important. What another thing that really fascinated me about the book is the story that you told about one of the guides or team members that was kind of like working, well, maybe not working against
overtime.
The person, but yeah, well, there was when you were doing the overworking thing, but also, well, go ahead and tell that story. Yeah. And then there was a person who didn't have the team members at all, but sometimes we're not, so it's possible sometimes that we're not harnessing our team members the correct way.
Yes. So when we talk about the team, we want to recognize that they are individual souls just like us, literally hanging out on another floor. And as children, we might have remembered them as our imaginary friends. And your team is around you, and they hold a similar level of consciousness. And so when we start connecting with our team and inviting them to be only attached, desiring and responsible for their own energy, not each other, not us, not our body, then they're actually able to start holding a higher vibration inside themselves. And not very often, I mean, only once in probably, God, I don't want to know even how many sessions I've done in the last decade, but only one client of mine came in without a team. And he had to prove that he had to do it alone in order to prove his strength. And so I think that the majority of people do have teams. And when you think of one quality you want your team to hold inside themselves that will positively, empathically impact you, think of your challenges. Maybe it's insecurity, maybe it's self-hatred, maybe it's a loneliness. And you ask them to hold the solution of that quality, that vibration inside themselves. And then as they do that, you start to be energetically impacted by these beings in another dimension. It's a huge, powerful resource. But the way that they can do that is to be only attached, desiring, and responsible for their own energy. The moment we attach and desire for another person's reality, we drop our energy fields of coherence from 100% to zero.
So that's true with the team members as well as what we do with people in our lives.
Absolutely. Like if I say, I want them to be happy. Yeah. I want them to be happy, or I want them to be in integrity, or I want them to be kind. Well, then we're not modeling the solution to them. And we're disempowering them because we're thinking that we are somehow more capable of doing it than they are.
Right, and that we have the answer and that they just need to do what we tell them to do.
Right.
So non-attachment.
Mm-hmm. Desire only for yourself.
And say something about that, because you mentioned in the book that some people think, that sounds really selfish. And so explain why it's not.
The desire part, right? If I think of a quality that I really value, and then I project what I'm wanting and valuing on another, that actually disempowers them. So if I want peace, but that person actually wants happiness, then that's not actually serving anyone. And we all remember moments where somebody essentially projected what they wanted for us onto us. And that is incredibly disempowering and actually insulting to our own inner intelligence. And so when we recognize that we value a particular vibration or quality, then we want to hold that on ourselves We can energetically send information and model the solution as we say, you know what, I value peace. I want peace for myself. I'm not going to want it for another, which means I'm not going to project that value and want other people to value what I value, because then we get into what I call as spiritual arrogance. And so it's actually incredibly empowering and high levels of integrity to not want for anyone else but yourself.
But you can be not, you can be wishing like no harm on people. I mean, there can be general things like worldly ideas, like that people not suffer or that people experience love without getting attached to that. Or are you saying that like we don't? Because I'm thinking about some of, you know, like the Buddhist, you know, chants or like free all from suffering and may all being, you know, the all sentient beings be free of suffering and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I have a slightly more radical heresy stance on that. And that is that instead of wanting people to be out of suffering or to cultivate self-love, we would, our first stance, step one would be, I'm only attached to the vibrations or qualities I value. And then step two, I'm only responsible for that. No one else, nothing else. And then we're going to hold what I call our soul gifts, our wisdom and our mastery for attaining that vibration just on ourselves. We're not going to put our gifts energetically on others. And then after the third step, we go into what I think of as the most powerful, transformative, healing stance that we can hold. We hold compassion for whatever someone is doing. If they're in a place of self-hatred or war or disrespect, we're honoring their process in their growth and evolution and simply seeing that behavior as one of the steps in their process of growth and evolution. And so as we're holding this solution inside ourselves and holding a compassionate stance, the moment someone feels a compassionate, safe space to be in whatever they need to be in, they immediately start to connect with what I call their own higher self, healing source, spiritual power. And then they start to bring in their own solutions for themselves and evolve. But if we're judging or wanting them to change their behavior, then we're actually not creating a space for them to be in the process, move through the process, and beyond.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, that's hard. I'm not saying that's easy because, you know, it takes a long time to cultivate that inner attachment and then the compassion component.
Right. In the book, when you're talking about how there are two souls, like the body, the physical, our physical bodies have a soul, and then there's also a soul housed in that's using it as a form to be here. Is that correct? Then,
right. So it's like you're riding a horse.
I'm wondering if when you hear people talk about, you know, transgender people who talk about how they just feel like their body isn't, that they're not comfortable in their body, that they feel like they've always felt like they were, if they're a female, like if their body is female, that they were always a male, that they've always felt that way, or they've always felt like they were female in a male body. Do you have any thoughts on all of that? And does that make a lot of sense to you?
I given do. And thank you for asking me that. People have sort of touched on it, but nobody's really said like, Alea, what do you think about the transgender? And I've actually worked with people who do have that confusion with sexuality or a different orientation with sexuality. And what I've found is that their body, deva, nature, spirit, physical human form that they're riding in, it's like a soul riding in a body. There's literally two souls. It's like you're riding a horse. We would imagine that the body is identifying with its previous incarnation when it was in, say, a male form. And it's okay. Like it didn't get the update and reference point its identity with its female form. Now, another thing that I've seen is that in the next incarnation, the soul is going to be taking the form, let's say it's a woman, she's going to be taking the form of a man. And so the body deva starts to reference its new identity, literally in between lives, so to speak. And so with the individuals that I've worked with that really wanted to have the alignment and not be over-identifying with, let's say they're a female and they keep feeling like their body deva is a male, we have the body deva nature spirit bring in more of the feminine energy for itself so that it sort of has its reference points updated. So getting everybody on the same page.
They're feeling more integrated.
Absolutely. And I've worked, I'm just thinking of one of my clients where his body deva was female. He had kind of a feminine energy. I would call him like the guy that's very, very soft and sweet, and but had a hard time really finding an appropriate beloved partner. And as soon as we had his body deva shift its identity from being a female body deva to a masculine body deva, he started to embody more of that masculine energy and was able to bring in appropriate beloved partner.
And was he heterosexual?
Yes, he was. But I would say he sort of leaned over the fence, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
But not so much that it was a lifestyle choice that he wanted to make.
So it was maybe really painful for him, that struggle then.
Yes, absolutely. So when his body deva started to identify with the masculine, that pain and suffering went away, and he started feeling more authentically in alignment with that chosen stream that he chose for this incarnation.
Have you worked with anyone who's gone through gender reassignment surgery?
No.
All of that kind of stuff?
I have not. And I think that's a pretty intense stance. And I'm not so sure, you know, we always have to honor free will and choice.
Yeah.
And so I think part of the evolution of the body is recognizing that it's actually masculine and feminine. And so if a body deva nature spirit is like, I need to have surgery in order to move into this vibration and stance, then okay, go for it, body deva. That's part of your evolutionary experience.
Mm-hmm. But would you argue that your kind of work would, make it so someone wouldn't feel so, driven to have to go through a surgical process, that they wouldn't need that to feel as comfortable in who they are?
I would give it a good shot. And then after a period of time, then have them make that decision, but more from a neutral place as opposed to a really charged place. So anytime we do something because we're supercharged about it, getting the need met externally, then it gets complications, right?
Right.
So my whole shtick is to really help people move into a place of neutrality and then get the need met, or then decide if that's even appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Just to bring, what you're talking about is bringing more awareness to their situation, maybe understanding themselves and their state of being more completely before making a decision like having major surgery.
Yes, and it's really understanding where it's coming from. It's not so much coming from the soul, unless the soul is over-identifying with the body. We want to make sure that this stance or choice is really coming from the body deva, nature spirit, and making sure that the body gets what it wants, because it is a conscious sentient being. We're just riding in it. And so I don't think of souls as masculine or feminine. We'll definitely take the form of in male, female for a time, but our light bodies are more neutral beings when we're not in human form.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our fascinating discussion. We're talking about seven cups of consciousness. Change your life by connecting to the higher realms with Alea Dow.
Do you tend to overreact and let your emotions rule your interactions with others? Do you become defensive or find it difficult to see things from another's point of view? Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen. You're not alone. Despite the fact that we all have to deal with people in our daily lives, many of us have difficulties with interpersonal relationships. My suggestion? Pick up a copy of the Interpersonal Problems Workbook. This book combines powerful evidence-based techniques for strengthening relationships in all areas of your life, whether it's at home or work, with a significant other, a parent, or your child. To find out more about the Interpersonal Problems Workbook, go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Pick up a copy and improve your relationships.
America's wounded warriors are coming home. After serving on foreign shores, these brave men and women are returning to their families and communities. Many have wounds you can see, and many have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. Now that these warriors are back home, they are ready to enter the civilian workforce. To help, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work Program, a career counseling service that helps warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These extraordinary men and women bring proven world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork to the job. And to ensure the right warrior finds the right job, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right match. When you hire a wounded warrior, you hire an intelligent, talented, and committed new employee. Contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, I'm Michelle Skeen, psychologist, author, and host of Relationships 2.0. On my radio show, I interview guests who present their unique perspectives and expertise on topics that cover all aspects of relationships. If you want to improve your relationships, and let's face it, we all have room for improvement, tune in to Relationships 2.0 with Dr. Michelle Skeen. If you miss my show or you're interested in listening to past podcasts, you can go to my website, www.michelleskeen.com. Again, www.michelleskeen.com. Tune in and improve your relationship.
We're having a little bit of problem with the music. Joe needs another cup of coffee or a cup of consciousness, which reminds me, I want to let everyone know that your website is www.cupsofconsciousness.com, and you have meditations on there and lots of great additional information. Anyway, let's get back to what this other part that I wanted to talk to you about. Hold on. I have so many. Let's talk about the blueprints. First of all, I love your glass elevator metaphor. I think that's really helpful. And I think that any kind of metaphors are often helpful for people and resonate with people in different ways. So the more the merrier, which is what you do in the book.
So the glass elevator is kind of step one. If we want to change anything in our outer world, we're going to pull ourselves into this inner river of light that flows actually on the front of the spine. I call it the divine line, your glass elevator, your column, your tube, whatever word works for you. And we use the inhale, the imagination and intent, to pull ourselves into this inner river. Kind of think of it like your oxygen line. And when you're in that inner place, you are essentially energetically online so that you have the ability to make requests to your energy self to make the changes. If you're not online, sending the email is not as efficient, effective, and quick. And so as we hold ourselves in this inner place, then we're able to tap into what you were mentioning, the blueprints. You have blueprints for every aspect of your life. And I really think of the physical dimension as the reflection of the higher realms. And there are blueprints for your relationships, your finances, how you express your creative current on these higher floors, kind of like an architectural blueprint. And so if you want those areas of your life to hold different vibrations, qualities, experiences, you would invite your higher self to infuse those vibrations, those positive qualities, connection, love, abundance, greater support, empowerment, into those blueprints on a higher floor. Then you would also hold that inside yourself in your divine line. You'd get your body and your team to do the same. And I speak about the sacred trinity. When we get all three energies, you, your body, and team, all holding the same qualities inside and in the higher realms, manifestation becomes evident in the physical plane. In Christianity, they talk about it as the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost. And I just got a little more direct and now call it your higher self, soul essence, energy, your body, and your team.
Does this get, is any of this like offensive to people who are practitioners or believers of traditional religion?
I'm sure it would be. It's also quite offensive if you want to give power to a God who is creating your reality. So it's really going to trigger a lot of people that might not want to be responsible for the idea that they are creating their reality. It's easier to give that responsibility to a higher power. And so, yeah, it's definitely going to trigger people.
Yeah.
Sure.
And believe, again, this idea that I would love for someone else to do the work. I mean, I say to my kids, I have one who's 19 and one who's 23, like the 19-year-old is still, you know, under the wing of, you know, of parents. But the 23-year-olds, I mean, you know, obviously they're still, you know, we're still deeply connected, but I'm just saying, like, you're an adult, and sometimes that's great, and sometimes it sucks to be an adult. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have anyone doing the stuff for you. It's every day, you know, you're getting up and you're saying, oh, I need to take care of that. Oh, that would be so nice if there was someone to take care of that for me. So let me just give all of this power away to someone else, right? So I don't have to do this, because this is a lot of work. And I think it is great for people to whatever makes them feel secure and to have attachments and to have a sense that someone else is looking out for them, which is actually what you're presenting in your book. It's just a different, just a different concept. And it's almost, I mean, it feels to me like you're saying, here are your people, work with your team. You still have to work. Your team doesn't do the work without you. Or if they are, it's not going to necessarily go well if they're unmanaged. Right?
It's also handing the responsibilities appropriately. So your body, Deva, nature spirit, is actually really great at manifesting and getting stuff done. And then the soul has other particular vibrations, and your team have other particular, responsibilities. And so when you, your body, and team are all holding responsibilities appropriately, then it's very empowering instead of overwhelming. And then also we recognize that we are not responsible for anything else other than our river of light, divine line, same for the body and team. And then we start moving into greater degrees of empowerment and things become possible. But when we hold responsibilities that aren't ours, or we give responsibilities that are ours to other people,
yeah.
Oh, life is scary.
Right. Yeah. I just lost this thought.
Responsibility.
I know what you meant. You talk in the book. You mentioned The Secret, although in the book it says it's a movie. I thought The Secret was a book. Was it both?
It was both. Yeah.
Oh,
I should have said book.
Okay. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I didn't read the book or see the movie, but I remember that it was. But that it was a really big thing. And this was I think Oprah was all over it, right? So it became this really big thing about, you know, you just have to, here's the secret to, well, you probably understand it. You could explain it. Like, here's the secret to how to get what you want and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So talk about the why you're discussing the secret in your book and why it's a secret.
Well, from my perspective, when we get this energetic part of ourselves and the energetic part of our body and our team all holding a similar quality or vibration, we're focusing more on quality as opposed to, I want a particular kind of car, or I want that job, or I want to bring in a beloved partner. If you think about what it is you want in your life externally, identify the quality that you would actually be feeling if that were to manifest in the physical realm. And so if you think, oh, if I had lots of money, I would feel free or happy. Okay, now we're going to take it off of money, the outer, and we're going to have you, your body, and your team all embodying that quality in the divine line and in the higher realms. When that happens and you're fully embracing and receiving it on that higher floor, that sacred trinity, then it reflects. So I would say that that is the real secret of getting all three, totally receiving it, being in the experience of it in a higher realm, and then reflecting it into the physical plane. That is the key for manifesting.
Okay. And then you talk about the flip it. I liked the flip it thing a lot. So we're taking our challenge, which is often overwhelming to us, right? Whatever the challenge is. And you're saying if we flip it, we can find our solution instead of, I mean, what I think about is the way that, you know, we can all get so stuck in whatever the problem or the challenge is that we can't see our way out of it, and it can just bog us down. So this is your solution for dealing with that. And I love the way that you talk about how important it is to identify the emotion behind the challenge.
Yes, it's just fuel. And so the bigger the challenge, I think of that as the more determined the soul is to activate a very particular vibration. We're just doing the opposite. So if I'm entrenched in the victim, my soul is determined to master empowerment, but I have to collect enough victim nuggets to eventually flip me into empowerment. And I'm a little bit of an energetic prima donna. I don't like being uncomfortable for very long. And after I had that enlightenment experience in 2001, I was painfully aware of all of the challenges that I was still holding inside me, and forced myself to come up with a formula that would help me embody the solution instead of being entrenched in the challenge. And so in the book, there is a flip it section where it helps you identify what it is you're really after, and then start using the higher self and the energy fields to hold that vibration more and more, and then the challenges actually start to transform.
So you have a summary, you have an example of what that might look like, if you don't mind me reading this for the listeners. So you identify the challenge, and then, so this is part of the process, identify the challenge, how do you feel, what do you need, and then the solution. In this case, you're talking about someone, and I think this happens with a lot of people, who is feeling disrespected. So the challenge is that someone disrespected you. Your feeling is that you're angry. Your need is that you want to be respected. And the solution is to hold responsibility for respecting yourself and activate the vibration of respect in your divine line. Respect yourself, let go of needing someone else to respect you. You know, it's so interesting because I really do see that. I mean, this I think makes a lot of sense for people that they are not doing for themselves what they want other people to do for them, which is what, you know, you talk a lot about in the book and we've already talked about. But it's worth repeating that until we can demonstrate that we have respect for ourselves, we can't really expect other people to, or rely on other people to do that. I guess we can have an expectation, but it's that whole reliance or that is problematic.
Right. Well, and also, you know, is it really my job to respect other people, or is it more my job to respect myself? And if I respect myself deeply, I'm then able to respect others. But if I'm not deeply respecting myself, how can I even begin to deeply, authentically respect another? And so when we think, I think everybody in the world, well, maybe not everybody, but we want to make the world a better place. And so the more we're actually meeting our needs deep inside ourselves for ourselves, we then have the ability to do it for others, but not from a codependent, needy, or martyrdom stance. It's more like, I'm full within myself and I respect myself, and so of course I'm going to hold a level of respect for you, but not because that's something you need from me. It's something that I'm already doing deep inside. So again, you know, coming back to that healthy co-creative way of being instead of the codependent.
Right. And, you know, I always think of, and this will tie in with getting, you know, in touch with the emotions behind the challenge, but I find myself usually when my inner critic is really loud, I tend to be more critical of other people. And
right.
So when I'm feeling good about myself and, you know, compassionate and grateful, then I am that way with other people. So when I start feeling, I mean, usually it doesn't translate verbally for me. It's in my head. I'm having critical thoughts about people. And I think, and now I, because I know the connection, I can say, oh, this is because you're not feeling great about yourself. Oh, why aren't you feeling great about yourself? Oh, because you have this looming book deadline and and you still have a bunch of chapters to write. Very now for me, and I know you can relate to that as an author. But,
oh yeah.
So I think that again, like awareness. I feel like that theme is definitely running through your book, and that it's really important for everyone. And again, it can be really very uncomfortable for us to look at ourselves. It's so much easier for us to look at other people with a critical eye, or to identify ways in which they need to change and things that they need to do, and not do our own work.
Yes. And the other piece with that critic or anything is we want to ask ourselves, am I being truly critical of myself, or am I actually empathically feeling this other person who is critical of themselves? And so a lot of the times when we're interacting and engaging with people, we might start judging them and we might go, wait, why am I judging them? Oh my gosh, that's how they judge themselves. And you're just empathically picking up on it and reflecting to them their own internal reality. That is a possibility. And then the other piece with the critic that I've found is that I actually think of it simply as fuel. So the critic has a certain amount of energy, pretty intense. And if we think of the looming deadline, we could actually use the critic to propel ourselves in the direction in which we intend. So we actually just flip it out of a negative frequency into a higher one and use it as a motivating mechanism in a positive stream. Or we think of the self-critic and the solution would be self-love and self-acceptance. And so every single time the self-critic comes up, we could actually ask our energy self to activate self-love and self-acceptance. Again, we're flipping it and using it just as fuel. And I would then start thinking of it more like the yellow light on the gas gauge of an indicator I'm ready for more self-love or self-acceptance.
Oh, that's great. That's a great way to think about it. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that the fuel's getting low.
And you need more. You're ready for more. Yeah. You've integrated. Uh-huh.
I like that a lot. We have a few minutes remaining. I want you to be able to talk about what you think is really important to further articulate or highlight as part of your book, or even a story about your own journey, which you share parts of in your book, Seven Cups of Consciousness.
I hear the word self-acceptance, and the way that we want to start practicing that more and more is to hold our awareness in this inner river of light, your crystal elevator shaft that flows up and down the front of the spine, and using the breath to pull ourselves into that place, and then just using your imagination, your intent, your energy self to activate that vibration of the light that flows within you. It is your essence, that divine and perfect part of you. And when you hold your awareness in this inner river and you just accept that light, just love that light, you don't have to love your belief systems, your behaviors, what relationships you're in or not in, your accomplishments, goals, or dreams, just the light that flows within, fully accepting that, receiving that deeply, recognizing that that is actually where you are deeply supported and in a state of constant connection. And you can gain access to that just with one inhale. As you hold your awareness there and accept your own light, you will actually start creating a life where you are more accepted, embraced, appreciated, and received. But it's because you're doing it deep inside and only receiving the part of you that is so true and pure. It's the only part of you that's actually real. So that would be my little wish. Not that I'm attached to anyone doing this, just inside myself bottling that in the world. I desire that, so not for you.
I do not wish that for you. I wish that for me. One of the things that I got from your book that I think seems important maybe in this whole process is that you have a big outdoor life. And that you are also an exerciser. And, you know, I run almost daily outside, and it's really important for me to connect with the outdoors and also to just stay in touch with my body and get those endorphins that I love so much. Does that play a role in any of this at all, or is that just kind of a thing that you do that isn't related to any of this?
Well, it's actually more a need that my body deva has, nature spirit, and so I definitely will push my body pretty hard because I have to record meditations and write and do sessions, and then when I'm done with the Alea to-do list, I then say to my body, "Body, what do you want to do?" And she's like, "I want to go for a walk, or I want to garden, or I want to get on the elliptical trainer, or I want to go work out, or I want to go skiing or hiking or garden." And then also there's a little bit of a river rock addiction where we had 12 tons of river rock downloaded onto our property. And my body loves lifting rock. And I had a really interesting experience a few months ago when I was gardening, and I was being very still inside myself, and I heard my body, very different voice than mine, say, "This is how I connect with myself." And we are literally putting like a lavender plant in the ground. And I could palpably feel how my body is an extension of the nature kingdom. And by connecting to nature, it connects to itself more deeply. So I discern the difference of needs of what do I, Alea, need, the soul rider, and what does my body, Deva, need? And then in a collaborative way, making sure that both of those needs get met.
Right. But in the body Deva way, that's probably true for everyone, right? I mean, if we, there are just so many studies that indicate that it's just like getting in touch with nature is just so important, and that it improves just general sense of well-being.
Absolutely. It's literally like the body coming home. And so when we really hold a space for the body to get into that nature environment in the woods, away from traffic and people and busyness and technology, then the body reconnects to itself.
Mm-hmm. So that's its own kind of like awakening.
And medicine, really.
Yeah. Are you finding that this kind of work is easier or more difficult for people because of the distractions that are available to us now with, you know, technology?
Our distractions are actually working for us because it's causing more discomfort and awareness of disconnection. And the dogs agree. So essentially what happens.
Yeah, I'm in touch with nature here.
You are. And so the technology, right, you look at the cell phone and we have this anticipation that we're going to experience a deeper level of connection if we go onto our mobile devices or computer or internet. But actually what happens is the inner disconnect amplifies and then our craving for connection increases. Now, we're still going externally for it, but eventually it's going to become so uncomfortable that you'll, oh, it's like mana to come back in. And so people are actually more eager to connect deeply and internally. It's like they've gotten to their tipping point a little faster.
Okay, so it's because they're connecting externally, using these devices or going on social media, then getting to a point where they recognize that, wow, I am not any more connected to people. I feel actually really disconnected and,
yeah, and even more so,
isolated and alone. And now I need to go in and figure out what's going on and look for a solution.
Right.
It's kind
so
of creating,
the technology is supporting.
Like what saying in the book, it's kind of creating the challenge and then you flip it.
Right. And on some level, having the cell phone and access, you know, instant access on some level, is starting to trigger a deeper craving for connection.
Yeah.
Great. It's just an uncomfortable phase right now. But eventually we will flip into the inner connection instead of the outer.
Yeah, and one of the great things about it, I mean, there are a lot of great things. I wasn't trying to demonize technology or social media, but one of the great things is to remind everyone of your website, cupsofconsciousness.com, is that, you know, now there are different ways for people to access lots of really great help and information, and including, you know, going on your website and being able to download meditations and all of that. And we're out of time, and it's just been such a treat to chat with you, Alea Dow, author of Seven Cups of Consciousness. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, and congratulations on your book. Thank you for sharing your wisdom.
Thank you.